Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 7:32. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Hi FM. Dr. Carl, our science communicator. Good morning. How are you today?
Ever so peachy keen, Dr. Howard.
It is really great to chat to you. So, a couple of questions that we wanted to talk to you about, and it's always a discussion. It's a cool day. No, it's a boiling day. Some people say, well, you know, it's nice to drink something ice cold, or others say, no, you drink warm tea because that cools you down. What is going on here? What is the answer to this question?
If a human was purely a box without any actual functioning physics inside, always the answer would be to have something cold.
Right.
Because you're adding some cool to the system.
Right.
However, we humans are dynamic. So our skin weighs 1/10 of our body weight. That's, if you're 60 kilograms, it's 10 kilograms. And it's got 100,000 kilometers of blood vessels in it. Now, those, and it's normally at a temperature of around 33 degrees C. Now, if all of those blood vessels, if you jump into the freezing cold water in the ocean, in the Antarctic, all those blood vessels close down. And so you're not losing any heat from your core. But if you're in a hot day or in a sauna, they all 100,000 kilometers of them open up. And so your skin temperature rises from, say, 33 to 35, so you can radiate your heat away better. So maybe, and I haven't been able to find a paper on this, maybe there is a factor that the warm tea does something, blah, 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 internal physics, fancy physiology, blah, 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 and then your blood vessels open up and you radiate your heat away better. I do not know, but if it does work, that would be one of the possible pathways by which it could work.
So that is interesting. So having a cold drink on a hot day,
Well, we don't know, but for me, I just go for a cold drink because I'm figuring I'm just adding some more cools to the system internally. But I have not yet read that scientific paper, so it could be the case, but I can give you a definite don't know. There you are, there's a scientific answer, a definite don't know.
Right. Let's talk about a small light can be a star.
Yeah, so so you've got these things, these places in the galaxy called stellar nurseries, where stars are born.
Right.
And there's about 7,000 of them in our galaxy, which is about 100,000 light years across.
Right.
And there the density of stuff is very high. So the vacuum of space is not a pure vacuum. It is better than the best vacuum that we can make on Earth, but still every cubic millimeter there's a hydrogen atom.
Right.
You know, one here, one there, one there. And they, when you go to these stellar nurseries, instead of just one, like there's millions, it's still a low number. But that's enough that when a shockwave comes through, say from a star exploding, they coalesce and then spread apart. But sometimes when they coalesce, there's a whole lump of them and they've got more gravity and they start sucking the other ones in. And so you end up with stuff being sucked in. And so you end up with a star forming from just this overall hydrogen. And there's this big cloud of hydrogen. And there's other stuff as well, stuff from other stars that exploded in the past. So we're talking about how a star forms, and then the star, then stuff falls into it. And when the star gets to about, or when this lump of hydrogen gets to about 70 times the mass of Jupiter, bingo, it ignites, and you've got a fusion, and it gets very hot, and you've got yourself a genuine star. And they can get heavier and heavier. But in that range from 70 down to about 13, as it sucks in the hydrogen, it's still not enough mass to jam it all together and make it ignite.
Right.
So it will ignite if there's a type of hydrogen called deuterium, but only for a few million years. We call that thing a brown star. And we thought that they bottomed out at around 13 times the mass of Jupiter. But scientists were saying they could go down to 7 times the mass of Jupiter, and we think we've found them, and they call this the James Bond limit, the 007 fraction of the mass of a regular star. Now, how this will make our lives better in the short term, I don't know. But on the other hand, scientists looking for black holes did accidentally invent Wi-Fi. So that's the thing. Oh, actually.
Say that again. Front,
scientists, yes. Australian scientists,
yes.
Looking for black holes.
Right.
Accidentally invented Wi-Fi.
You know, I thought that's what you said. Tell me more.
Yeah. Well, imagine you've got some long grass in the out the right. front, and you drop a little golf ball in it. You can't find it because it's buried in the long grass. But if you've got very flat grass,
right.
you can see the golf ball. So what I'm talking about here is the concept of signal to noise. Right?
Right.
So with radio and TV, you've got lots of signal and hardly any noise at all. But if you go looking at the universe, there's just all this noise coming from stars doing stuff. And Stephen Hawking, the wheelchair guy, said way, way back in the 70s that there was a possibility that very low mass black holes could evaporate. And as they would evaporate, they'd do a little tiny electrical electromagnetic signal like a boop. But the background noise of the universe was really loud, you know, like it'd be right. 1 millimeter compared to several kilometers of noise. And so some Australian scientists, John O'Sullivan, in the early 1970s, they went looking for this and they think, oh, the problem's really difficult because what you've got is a very weak signal and a lot of noise. And they invented
right.
a special mathematics called fast Fourier transform,
yes.
which would find this incredibly small signal buried in the noise, and they couldn't find any black holes. But then when they came out with Wi-Fi, it turned out to be essential. So when you've got your little phone
mm-hmm.
and you're putting out this tiny signal, and around you in a shopping centre are
so
another 100
noise,
people,
yeah.
and by the way, in radio,
right.
what you've got is a signal, maybe 9,000 hertz, 99 kilohertz wide, and then you've got a gap,
right.
and then you've got another signal and another signal. With Wi-Fi, they all overlap. So you've got one signal, and then just a little tiny bit up, overlapping the first one, you've got another signal, another one, and you've got to have that, because that's the only way you can deal with thousands of people in a shopping center.
Amazing.
And so all overlapping each other. And that was invented by scientists looking for black holes. And as a result, Australia got $1 billion in royalties for inventing Wi-Fi.
Absolutely incredible. That is such interesting information. Dr. Carl, we need to leave it there. Thank you. As always, it is nearly 7:40. I'm Howard Feldman. This is Your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM. Good morning.